Chapter 2. The trip through the time portal was like jumping through a hoop. Instantaneously, we landed in Holland. I quickly surveyed the geography and discovered we were in a field not far from the small Dutch port of Delfshaven. Thankfully, we were alone. Wildflowers with yellow and maroon blossoms buzzed with honeybees. An apple orchard was not too far to our left. "Oh, look! Apples," Liberty said. "My favorite!" He started trotting toward the nearest tree. "You know that apples are an excellent source of dietary fiber and vitamin C, too," he said. "Of course, apples also have plenty of essential minerals, like potassium, calcium, magnesium." "Liberty, my brilliant friend," I butted in, "your nutritional understanding of an apple is impressive, but we are here on a historical quest. So let's gather some apples and stick them in your saddlebag quickly. We need to head over to where that ship is." And I pointed to the harbor. "Oh, all right," Liberty sighed as we began plucking apples. I opened the saddlebag and we both dropped them in, and after about 20 apples, we journeyed over to the port. I could smell the salty sea. I could watch the water push up and back along the beach and hear the sound of seagulls as they soared above us. Liberty trotted toward a large gathering of people near the shore. I noticed their colorful and bright clothing. "Pardon me," I said to a young woman wearing a long green woolen dress and a linen cap that came down over her ears. She was walking toward the shore and carrying a cat that seemed very curious about Liberty. I smiled and continued. "I'm looking for the Pilgrims. I mean the Puritans. I understand their plan is to sail to the New World." For a split second, I worried that I might have missed them. I added, "They're probably wearing dark, drab clothing. I assume the men have tall, black stovepipe hats." The woman turned in my direction but didn't stop walking. She stared at me as if I were some strange animal at a zoo. She quickly replied, "If you're looking for the Puritans, you've found us." "These? The Puritans? I've always imagined the Pilgrims in clothing that was black, white, and gray. However, these people wore clothing that was dyed every color of the rainbow. A yellow shirt, blue breeches, green stockings, red dress, purple knitted stocking cap. I was sorely mistaken to think that I knew what the Pilgrims wore every day. It was time to get my class involved. "Class," I said, "these are the real Pilgrims." And I pointed the lens of my smartphone toward the large group that had gathered. In the year 1620, they were known as Puritans, or Saints, or Separatists. Many of them separated themselves from the Church of England and escaped to Holland, where they could practice their religion without being bullied by King James and his bishops. I pointed toward the big ship in the harbor. And I can see that several men, women, and children are boarding smaller boats to take them to the larger ship anchored in the harbor. Let's go find out the truth. Liberty and I approached the large gathering. I called to the first man we approached. I said, "Excuse me, sir, but is the ship out there the Mayflower?" A man turned in my direction. He looked about 30 years old. He could have passed as a movie star. He was tall, with brown hair and a cleanly trimmed beard. He wore a leather hat that shaded his face from the sun, a long-sleeved light blue shirt, blue breeches, green woolen stockings. I could see that he was comforting a woman in a long woolen red dress. He had his arm around her, and I could tell that she was crying. I quickly said, "Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bother you." The man looked at Liberty and then to me and said, "It's no bother. I'm not familiar with any ship called Mayflower. The ship out yonder is the Speedwell." That's odd, I thought. Where was the Mayflower? "You look bewildered," said the kind stranger. "Can we help you? Are you looking for someone?" "As a matter of fact, I am," I replied. "I'm looking for one of the leading members of the Puritans, Mr. William Bradford." Immediately, the woman stopped crying, and the man stepped in front of her. He responded, "I'm William Bradford. Do you come bearing bad news?" Surprised at my sudden discovery, I jumped off Liberty. I reached out to shake his hand. "Mr. Bradford, it is an honor to meet you. I am a big admirer. I would love to be of assistance to you." When I realized I was still shaking his hand, I let go and just smiled. William looked back at the woman who I assumed was his wife, and then back to me. He said, I'm sorry, but have we met?" Technically, no, I replied, but I was told I could find you here. I fudged the truth a little. I continued, you see, I'm a history teacher, an historian of sorts, and a pilgrim in spirit. And your Puritan faith fascinates me. I would love to follow you to the New World. I see, said William. The fellow Puritans always welcome to join us. We're boarding the Speedwell now. Many of us are saying goodbye to friends and family who are staying in Holland. Do you mind my asking why you're leaving? This looks like a beautiful country, a wonderful place to raise a family, I said, looking around and spreading my arms as if to show William everything he was leaving behind. And that's when I noticed Liberty following a man pushing a wheelbarrow loaded with large cheese wheels. And I hoped the horse was behaving himself. Looks can be deceiving, William said. We lived in Leiden, Holland, for 12 years. But it's not our home. Originally, we came from Scrooby, Nottinghamshire, England. But the government forced us to choose between following our faith and following the law. But what did you do? I asked. But we chose to follow our faith. So we left in search of a land where we could be free to believe and worship without persecution. And we found that here in Holland. We even created the Pilgrim Press and printed papers to help spread the word about religious freedom. But now we need a community that protects our families from evil influences. Some of our members, including our older youths, are beginning to leave the Puritan faith because of what they see and hear from our Dutch neighbors. It's for this reason that we've decided to start fresh in the New World. And I nodded with understanding. And I said, it appears your wife will miss this place. William's wife quickly looked away from me, and I could tell that she was trying desperately not to cry. So she tearfully excused herself. William reached for her, but she was now beyond his grasp. My wife Dorothy and I have decided to leave behind our 3-year-old son John. The journey is expected to be dangerous, and we've wrestled in mighty prayer to know whether or not we should bring him. We believe that God has told us that John would be safer if he stayed. He will be cared for, but as you can imagine, the decision has been particularly painful for Dorothy. And again, I nodded, trying to show support. I knew that William and his wife were only trying to do what was best for their toddler. However, I also knew that other pilgrims had chosen to bring their young children. William interrupted my thoughts and said, I apologize. I've yet to ask your name. And before I could respond, screams turned our attention toward the shops. Women were running toward us while dodging several large cheese wheels as they rolled toward the water. I had a funny feeling that I knew who was behind this. And when all the cheese wheels came to a stop, I looked for Liberty and presumed he was hiding. I turned back to William and I said, thank you very much for your time. I'm Rush Revere, and I look forward to visiting with you more on the Mayflower. And then I remembered what William had said. The ship the pilgrims were boarding was not the Mayflower. Is this the ship that you're taking to America? And I pointed to the harbor. It's one of them, he said. We purchased the Speedwell here in Holland. However, we need another. We have friends who are looking into hiring a ship in London. Hopefully, it'll be bigger and better than this one. We have many families, much to bring to the New World. Both ships are expected to meet in Southampton, England, before we embark for America. Now, I couldn't remember the fate of the Speedwell. Did it travel with the Mayflower all the way to America? Was it shipwrecked? Did it sink? Now, I know that William Bradford sailed on the Mayflower to America, so he had to survive the trip back to England. But what about the other men, women, and children? I turned my thoughts again to my new Puritan friend and thoughtfully said, I think it'll be best if I meet you in England. Confused, he asked, are you not traveling with us on the Speedwell? You have another ship coming for you? I stared at him as I searched for what to say. Finally, I replied, yes. Well, I'm waiting for someone, and I have supplies I still need to gather, and I... No excuses, my friend, William said, smiling. He firmly put both hands on my shoulders, stared straight into my eyes. With great sincerity, he said, there is no need to fear. Take courage. God will bring us to the new world. Whatever adversity we will face will only make us stronger. And he shook my hand. I hope whoever you're waiting for comes soon, and I hope our paths cross again. Safe travels, Rush Revere. As he left to find his wife and board the ship with the other pilgrims, I marveled at his courage, determination, and faith. I was eager to know what happened to the Speedwell, curious to reach England and meet the other travelers, and eager to experience life upon the Mayflower. First, however, I needed to find liberty and return to our classroom. I was very curious to know what my students had learned and a little worried to know what Liberty had been up to. Fortunately, I didn't have to look very far to find Liberty. I heard his high-pitched whistle coming from a bright-colored shop at the corner of the street. And that's when I saw his head peeking around the corner. Was he hiding? When I was close enough to speak to him, I asked, "Why are you hiding behind this shop?" "Funny you should ask," Liberty said with a grimace. "First things first, I need you to pay the shopkeeper of this store." "You broke something," I said. "No, I didn't break something," Liberty replied. "Just because I've broken things before doesn't mean I can't be trusted to try on wooden shoes in a small Dutch shop because I want to prove to that doubtful shoemaker that horses are wonderful cloggers." I looked down at Liberty's hooves, only to discover 4 bright yellow wooden shoes with red tulips painted on each of them. "Liberty, you're going to have to remove those shoes and return them immediately," I said. "An excellent idea, theoretically," Liberty replied. "The problem is, I can't. They're stuck. How I got them on, I have no idea, but these wooden babies are wedged on pretty tight." I reached down, I tried to pull one off, and sure enough, they stuck like super glue. I sighed with frustration and said, "What am I supposed to do, enter you in a horse clogging competition?" "Oh, brother, Liberty, I insist that from now on you stay by my side and do exactly what I say. Your freedom to choose as you please is becoming troublesome." Liberty calmly replied, "You're sounding an awful lot like King James." "Excuse me," I asked, not sure what he meant. He smiled. He said, "Here's the thing. I'm a curious horse. I can't help it. It's just who I am. Discovering new things that interest me is what makes me happy. I love that we can travel together and discover the truth about history. But what interests you may not always be what interests me. Forcing somebody else to like the things you like or to do the things you do is not what freedom's all about, is it?" "Of course not," I said humbly. And from what I heard near the cheese cooler, King James didn't want the Puritans to have the freedom to choose what they believed. He just wanted them to stay with the Church of England and do exactly what he said or else. But the Puritans believed that the Church of England practiced many things that the Bible never taught. So some Puritans called themselves separatists because they wanted to separate themselves once and for all from the Church of England. I even heard one of the Puritan women say that the king threw an entire family into prison just because they chose to believe differently than he did. I had a sick feeling in my stomach. I felt horrible for trying to force Liberty to do what I wanted. "I'm sorry, Liberty," I said. "You're absolutely right. Will you forgive me?" "Of course I'll forgive you. You're not the only one who makes mistakes," he said as he lifted up a wooden shoe and waved it at me. "All right," I said, "time for Plan B." I walked into the shop. I placed 4 gold coins on the counter, smiled at the shopkeeper, and walked back outside. "And just for the record, I hope you never feel forced to do anything. I'm glad you're a curious horse. And I'm especially glad the pilgrims had the courage to believe and think for themselves. Otherwise, America might not be a free country." I lifted myself onto Liberty's saddle and said, "I think it's time that we head back to the future." "Wait, you want me to run in these?" Liberty complained, staring at his shoes. "Well, you said you could clog in them," I replied. "Well, yeah, but clogging and running are 2 different things." "I won't force you," I said, smiling. "But humor me, will you? Back to modern-day America." "This is so embarrassing," Liberty said, pouting. He willingly trotted back to the same field that we'd arrived in. His trot turned into an awkward half-gallop. With a little more speed, he said, "Rush, rush, rushing from history. With one jump, we soared through the swirling time portal and landed back in the hallway at Manchester Middle. I knew the time portal created a 60-second delay of any footage from my smartphone to the digital projector. We had just enough time to slip into the back of the classroom without being noticed. We watched the students as they watched Liberty and me race back through that field and jump into nothingness. The movie ended, and Liberty flipped on the classroom lights. Tommy raised his hand and said, "Just for the record, I'm not a big fan of King James. He sounds like a real party pooper. He probably got too many wedgies when he was a kid." "Well, as you can imagine, these pilgrims weren't big fans of the king either," I replied. "They should have just done what the king told them to do," Elizabeth blurted out. Surprised, I turned to Elizabeth and asked, "Do you do everything someone tells you to do?" Elizabeth rolled her eyes and looked at the girl next to her. That girl, who I assume was one of Elizabeth's groupies, raised her hand and said, "What Elizabeth is trying to say is that no one tells her what to do." "Ah," I said, "well, then it sounds like you would have made a great King James." "You mean Queen James," Elizabeth said, suddenly realizing that she had just called herself by a boy's name. Several students tried to cover up their laughs, but Tommy couldn't resist. He said, "Hey, James, what's up?" He put his hand in the air as if to give Elizabeth a high five. She ignored him. "In all seriousness," Tommy said, "I like that William Bradford dude. He was cool. Too bad that he and his wife didn't bring their little guy with them." "Let me ask everyone the same question. If you were William Bradford, would you have taken your 3-year-old son on a death-defying voyage across a tempestuous sea?" I heard several half-hearted responses. "Probably, maybe, I think so, I guess." I'd almost forgotten about Freedom until she raised her hand like the tallest mast on the Mayflower. "Freedom, you have an opinion?" Freedom's dark eyes reminded me of that same determined stare that William Bradford gave me right before he boarded the Speedwell. Freedom spoke from somewhere deep within and said, "I could tell they loved their son more than anything. They only wanted what was best for him. It took courage for the pilgrims to leave their homes and travel into the unknown, but it takes more courage to travel into the unknown and leave someone you love behind." "Well said, Freedom," I replied. "Now who knows? Maybe they thought they could come back for him someday. Or maybe someone else had planned to bring him to America when he was older. I don't know. What we do know is that more than anything, the pilgrims like William and Dorothy Bradford were real people, ready to give their lives for their freedom, no matter the cost, no matter the pain, and no matter the sacrifice." Suddenly something yellow shot from the back of the room and would have struck me in the head if I hadn't dodged it at the last second before impact. It hit the chalkboard behind me and splintered into several pieces. From the back of the classroom, Liberty's eyes were as wide as cannonballs. With a surprised smile, he said, "By golly, those wooden shoes do come off. I was beginning to wonder. I think a larger size would have fit better. Of course, now it's going to be rather difficult to clog in only 3 shoes. Anyway, the trick to getting them off is to leverage this hoof like this and wedge the other by pushing down like that." And again, the second shoe shot off like a rock from a slingshot, but this time it whizzed to the left and crashed through an outside window. "Oops," Liberty said. I rolled my eyes, but before I could say anything else, the door to the classroom opened. Principal Sherman walked in, looking alarmed, and asked, "Did I just hear the sound of breaking glass?" His eyes locked on the broken window. "How did this happen?" He turned to the class, and then to me, and asked, "Is anyone hurt? How did the window break?" Curious, the entire class turned around to look at Liberty. And I wondered why Principal Sherman was not equally alarmed at the fact that there was an actual horse standing at the back of the classroom. However, upon further inspection, Liberty was gone. "Well, is anybody going to answer me?" Principal Sherman asked again. "Mr. Revere, do you have an explanation?" "An explanation?" I stalled. "Well, yes, of course." I realized that Principal Sherman would eventually find a yellow wooden shoe outside the classroom window. So I began, we were discussing the pilgrims and how they left England to escape religious persecution and settled in Holland along their journey to the New World. And I brought a wooden Dutch shoe from my trip to the Netherlands as a bit of show and tell. Principal Sherman interrupted me and said, pointing, "You mean like the one that's broken and splintered on the floor here?"
Oh, I'd forgotten about that one.
Yes, and apparently wooden shoes are not very sturdy. Principal Sherman walked over to the window. He saw the second wooden shoe lying on the grass near a big oak tree. "And yet that one looks just fine," he said. I joined him by the window and said, "Wood is stronger than glass?" He wasn't amused. He continued his classroom interrogation. "I've still not heard a reasonable explanation for why the window's broken." "Yes, I was getting to that," I said, wondering if this would be my last day teaching at Manchester Middle School. "Let me start by saying that this has been an excellent class," and before I could finish whatever it was I was going to say, Tommy jumped up from his seat and shouted, "I did it!" And I wasn't expecting that. Principal Sherman took a deep breath. He didn't look a bit surprised. I couldn't let Tommy take the fall for Liberty's antics. "I can assure you that it was somewhat of a bizarre accident," I said. "Yes, I'm very well acquainted with Tommy's accidents, but not everybody loves a class clown. Tommy, you'll report to my office as soon as class is over," said Principal Sherman, who nearly growled when he finished. If you'll permit me, Principal, I have an appropriate consequence for Tommy's outburst," I said. "Continue," the principal said while straightening his tie. "Well, we both know how much Tommy loves history," I said. "And I think the appropriate punishment is to keep him after for detention in my class. I'm happy to give him an extra lesson that he's bound to never forget." And I could see that Principal Sherman was pondering the idea and examining Tommy's reaction. Tommy didn't disappoint. His face showed pure misery. And the principal smiled, said, "I like that. In addition, Tommy will write on the chalkboard, 'I will not throw wooden shoes through glass windows 100 times. "I like your style, Principal Sherman," I said. "And I like yours, Mr. Revere, especially that tri-cornered hat. I need to get one of those," he said. "I'll have the custodian clean up and repair the window immediately." And with that, turned his huge shoulders and exited the classroom. Relieved, I let out a long breath. "Now, what happened to Liberty? How did he get out of the room so fast?" Tommy asked. I could hear several other students ask similar questions. Thankfully, I was saved by the bell before I had to answer their questions. Class was over. As the students grabbed their backpacks, I said, "Tomorrow, we'll continue the journey with the pilgrims. Thank you, everyone. Class dismissed." As the students began filing out of the room, I noticed that Tommy stayed behind for his detention and extra history lesson. And I noticed that Freedom stayed as well. I was pretty sure that it was her head I saw dart back into the classroom just as Liberty and I had jumped through the time portal. If I didn't know any better, I'd think that Freedom was on to me.